Welcome to American Variety Radio. I'm your host, Court Lewis. You know, it was always a truism that if your house was on fire, one of the few things you would grab as you ran out the door was the family photo album. It contained your baby pictures and your wedding photos and the pictures of your parents and grandparents and children and all the milestones of your life. After the tornado, that's one of the things that the people being interviewed on TV always seem to regret the loss of the most. But is that still true? Photo albums have been kind of obsolete, first by digital cameras and then even more by the fact that now everyone has a camera and video camera in their pocket. It's hard for the old 10-pound photo album to compete with Facebook on your smartphone. And your photos are on the cloud now, untouched by fire or storm. And in addition to all that, the power of the family has been waning for decades now. So people are hungry for roots now that they're much thinner and shallower than they once were. Not the people, but the roots. The popularity of Ancestry.com and 23andMe shows that, I think. So there's something about those old, faded, sepia-toned photos of stern-looking, well-dressed ancestors that 20 quick snaps a day of the kids and dogs just can't replace. They connect us to our roots. My guest is Thomas Allen Harris, the producer and host of a three-part documentary series coming up soon on PBS called Family Pictures USA. It explores communities and their inhabitants using the family photo album as a portal to let them discover who they are and their connections to each other and their past. Welcome, Thomas.
Thanks, Court. Glad to be here.
Appreciate you being on. First, why don't you just give us a quick overview of the whole series, where it was shot and what the general format is.
Okay, so this is the pilot series, something we've been working on for quite a few years. The first three episodes were shot in North Carolina, Detroit, Michigan, and Southwest Florida.
Okay, so the series that I mentioned premieres on Monday, August 12th at 9 p.m. Eastern, and Tuesday the 13th from 8 to 10 p.m. on PBS, and will also be available for simultaneous streaming on PBS.org. I'm from South Florida, Miami, and later on Fort Pierce farther up the Atlantic coast. The Southwest coast was almost like another state to us when I was a kid. But we visited there a few times, and I've been fishing in the 10,000 Islands south of Everglades City on that coast. So I relate strongly to your Florida episode, Thomas. I can remember visiting Naples when I was a little kid in the mid-50s and seeing houses built out over the water on stilts and not much else there. And we used to spend summers in the mountains of western North Carolina to where it seemed like all of Miami decamped in the summers before air conditioning. And I've never even been to Detroit, so we're going to focus on those two episodes, Florida and North Carolina, in this show. Plus, that's where most of my listeners are. So I have the advantage of having reviewed both of those episodes, so I'll talk about them from a perspective our listeners don't yet have. In each of your locales, you clearly make a point of interviewing a wide diversity of families in terms of economic, racial, and cultural background. For example, in Florida, you visited with a white rancher with a Mexican wife, a Seminole Indian family, the descendants of a Spaniard who was one of the first settlers of Fort Myers, the mixed-race descendants of a white slave owner, and descendants of English and Italian pioneers who settled Everglades City. So what was your strategy for the show in taking that kind of multicultural approach?
We were looking at Southwest Florida through the family albums of people. And basically, the model for this series is to work with local stations to tell the story of local communities for national broadcast. So we were very interested in inviting everyone to come in and share their family photographs. So we put out a wide call. And so we had about 100 people in each of those locations, 100 different families come in and share their family albums with us. We knew that we wanted to somehow talk about the origins, particularly of Southwest Florida, because the origins there are in some ways a little bit more recent, you know, relative to, let's say, North Carolina. We go back to the 1600s. And so we just, you know, we put out a large call. And so the people that showed up were people from all backgrounds. They were had going back to European immigrants, to people who came from the Upper South after the Civil War, to African Americans who came from the Upper South as well, to the Seminole Indians who fled from other states to Southwest Florida and were there during the Indian Wars. And so we really were interested in telling the story of this region, but through the family albums of people. And so we were interested also in how the family albums differed from, you know, one group of people to another. You know, these people had been there through hurricanes, as you had mentioned, and, you know, other disasters and also movements. And they were able to maintain their albums, you know, plus or minus intact. And so so we were interested in how we could kind of have these albums kind of rub up against each other and how they inform one another. And so the show follows both people into their communities, but it also has this kind of community photo sharing as its base. So that's where everyone comes and shares their family photographs. And in many ways, that's kind of like the chorus of the show. You know, we go, we follow someone for a period of time, and then we come back to the chorus. So the idea for the show is to have the albums and the stories be additive, so that at the end of the show, you have this full picture of this particular location from the perspective of the family albums. And, you know, we were interested in having a large diversity, you know, having voices that were as young as, like, you know, in their early 20s to, like, someone who is in their 90s. And those people are going to see the album in completely different ways, you know, as well as regional diversity. You know, we had people from Naples, you know, which is one of the wealthiest cities in the country, to Immokalee, which is one of the poorest. That was something that, for us, really interesting to do, because those two communities normally wouldn't come together.
Yeah, you really did manage to find some of the founding families of South Florida and some very interesting people. Even several generations on, those same families were producing interesting people. But it's interesting to me that you put out a call and they came to you. I guess I just assumed that you did some research, or your people did, and found the people you wanted to get to, and then you targeted them and invited them. But people came to you. That's kind of surprising.
Yeah, well, you know, we've been doing this for about 10 years. Initially, it was called Digital Diaspora Family Reunion. And I've been making personal films that kind of work with various communities to tell larger stories. And so I've been kind of traveling the country even before we embarked on this TV show. We've been traveling the country, inviting people to share their family albums with us. And that's actually the origins of the show. So we, you know, traditionally work with a wide variety of partners and put the call out. And so as we were developing the TV show, we had a great model in that, also in Antiques Roadshow. You know, and a lot of people kind of grew up with Antiques Roadshow over the last, you know, 20 some odd years or 30 years. I can't remember how long that's been running. But people are used to kind of bringing in their objects to, you know, their local public TV stations. In this case, we're using family photographs. For the most part, when people came in with their family photographs, it was the first time they had shared these images, you know, these family heirlooms and the stories behind them with someone that was outside of their circle of, you know, intimates, their family or their close friends. So it was really transformational for them to do that, you know, to share it with a stranger. They came in thinking they were going to share one story, but they also had the story of their hearts, you know, how they felt about it. And that may not have been something on their minds, but as they stood in front of the camera with their family photograph that might have been 50 years old or might have been a year old or 100 years old, they told these stories and the emotion comes out and the emotional story comes out. And that's what we were able to capture.
If you can kind of encapsulate it, what were some of the main things you learned in that process? I mean, I'm sure you learned a lot of specific things, but in a general way, did you kind of get any big sea change, paradigm shifts in your own view of people in the world got out of it?
Yeah. You know, the commonality that exists amongst us, people worked really, really hard to make sure the next generation survived. Their relationship to the land, something that most media comes out of New York or LA or is, you know, more recently very urban, but, you know, to be able to go to places that were really rural and see those stories and see how people work together to ensure their collective survival, to hear the story of origin, the founding families, as you'd mentioned, and how they came there and how the land has changed and the water has changed, how the economies have changed and how it's reflected in the family albums. The story of the origins of this country, you know, that's told state by state. It was so moving because normally when we think about history, we think about George Washington and the, you know, the great men who were taught about in history books. But, you know, to see the everyday people, like the women and the men coming together, and then to see farmers and fishermen and how their lives have changed and their kids' lives and grandkids and great-grandkids' lives have changed, that was pretty phenomenal. also in the case of Southwest Florida, how the impact of, say, air conditioning led to the change of the landscape, you know, in terms of the building of housing and population and housing and tourism has changed. I didn't know that much about the Everglades, you know, being from the Northeast. I heard of it, but I had never understood the power of it, the fact why it was called a river of grass. And so it's like, I'm just stunned at the way and the gratitude I have to be able to discover this country again through the family photograph, which allows us to see it both today, but, you know, 150 years ago through people's images.
Well, it's a pretty unusual approach to researching history, to go through the lens of family photo albums. And so I imagine no historian may have even done that before. So I suspect historians will be interested in watching your series as well as our listeners. And you are listening to American Variety Radio. I'm your host, Court Lewis. We're talking with Thomas Allen Harris, who's the producer of a series on PBS called Family Pictures USA. We've been talking so far about Southwest Florida, and there are three parts to the series. There's South Florida, North Carolina, and Detroit. And we're only going to have time really to talk about one of the other parts, which is North Carolina. And in North Carolina, it was very clear in the trailers that I saw of your show that tobacco was king, and it created not only wealthy families like the Dukes, who founded Duke University, but fascinating places I didn't know about, like the Black Wall Street in Durham, North Carolina, where a whole prosperous middle and upper middle class society of African Americans flourished in sort of a parallel universe to the white society. So here again, you profiled the mixed race descendants of a slave owner, and the descendants of textile mill workers met the descendants of the mill owners, who were kind of formerly wealthy people who are still local aristocracy, but I suspect not as wealthy or powerful as they once were. And they seemed much more low-key and kind of humble than I suspect the grandparents would have been. But what was that meeting of those two worlds like, which you sort of chaperoned and shepherded?
Well, it was pretty amazing. I mean, we met at the Alamance County Museum, which had been one of the houses of the Holt family, a textile family. And we brought one of their descendants of one of their enslaved peoples there, who had been actually a deputy, and he had been lynched at one point, but survived it. So we united these two kind of branches, had them kind of tell the story. That the person that we brought was Jackie Shelton Green. And she's a poet laureate of North Carolina, of the entire state. And we had them tell their stories in terms of their sharing their photographs together. You know, it was pretty phenomenal in terms of them hearing and meeting, you know, one another for the first time, and then hearing their respective stories of the situation that had, the traumatic situation that had happened after the Civil War, when Jackie Shelton Green's ancestor, who was working with the Holts, had been lynched. And so that was pretty phenomenal to have these two families come and begin a dialogue together. You mentioned the Black Wall Street, and that was also a history that I had never been aware of. I'd heard about it, but I had not understood the relationship between some of the people in Durham. You know, Durham completely changed because of tobacco and the Dukes and this, you know, Liggett Myers, and there were, you know, all these different families. But the Dukes in particular had a very close relationship with certain elements of the African-American community. Their philosophy was that in order for white Durham to prosper, Black Durham also had to prosper. So that was their philosophy, and that's what led to this kind of emergence of middle and upper class that cut across race lines, particularly in the wake of the Civil War and up until the Depression. And so it was just interesting to see how many people were related by blood, but also the entrepreneurial energy that was in the air and that led to the building of these various towns. It was pretty phenomenal how the tobacco industry and all the offshoots, you know, the building of factories. So a lot of people made money as brickmakers, with all these factory buildings having to be built. And so, and how it transformed from tobacco and textile into what it is today as a kind of a tech hub. And, you know, many people are moving to North Carolina. And so it's changing. There's a threat of culture being shifted. And so that's what we wanted to capture. What from the olden times are important and what from the newer times are affecting that.
Yeah, you went to several places in North Carolina in that segment, in that episode of the series. But it really struck me that I had not been aware of it, but Durham in particular seemed to be a very special place. And I mean, I think you encountered somewhere there the idea that there must be a social justice drug in the air or the water. Did that come through to you even now with the admixture of new people coming in and everything else? Did it seem like a very distinct place compared to the rest of North Carolina?
Most people think of that area and they think of Raleigh. So to go to Durham, and you know, it has the university, so it has that energy, but it has this particular history. And I think that it was the belief system that the Duke, Washington Duke, and passed down through his sons that really shaped the tenor of that early history. And today it is a little bit of a tech hub, you know, and so there's this other entrepreneurial spirit that's there that people are drawn to. So a lot of people who might have left Durham or North Carolina are coming back, and that's what we kind of looked at. But we were really looking at family albums and what people brought in. So we saw like this Jewish history in Durham. You know, at one point, one of the Duke's sons went up to New York and brought down these Jewish cigarette rollers. It was the establishment and flourishing of this Jewish community there. We followed people's family photo albums from the farm to when they actually moved to the city and transformed themselves from kind of more rural to a little bit more, you know, a little bit more urban. We also went to a farm in Institute Township that actually is the farm of Warren Brothers, who's featured in A Chef's Life, the popular North Carolina cooking show starring Vivian Howard. Mm. And so we saw Warren Brothers, who's in that show, and Miss Lily, and spent time with them and looking at this farm through the lens of the family album. And to go back, and like one of his ancestors had fought in the Civil War, and then the son was in the state legislature. And all the stories about that and how he and his wife came together. They grew up close by, Jane Brothers, and she's a teacher, he's a farmer. And we kind of combined their family photographs on the table and had them tell the stories. And it was the first time that had happened. So some of that is in the documentary and some of that is actually in our social media. You know, we interviewed so many people and we want all of those stories to be told. So we're releasing a lot of that on our YouTube channel, which is Family Pictures USA. So we want to be a hub where people can celebrate their own family photographs and telling these stories to their neighbors and to other Americans.
You know, again, in North Carolina, as in Florida, Thomas, there was a big emphasis in the documentary on blended, racially mixed families. For example, in the town of Oxford, that seemed to be far more the rule than the exception. Yet, I'm sure it was not the rule 50 years ago. So how prevalent is that family structure now in North Carolina? Just kind of briefly.
Yeah, because new people are coming in, there's a lot more mixing. It may not have been prevalent 50 years ago, but 100 years ago it was. You know, my great-grandmother was blonde with blue eyes, and you know, I'm African-American, so I have it in my family. We have Latinos in our family, and I think that we are trying to see or show families that might be blended, but also families who are not related by blood. You know, some families go back. They've been supportive and helpful of one another, and they're kind of part of an extended family, across race lines or even across class lines, wealthy families with families that might be more impoverished. So we're trying to actually kind of show these communal connections and how, and intersections as well. And that's something that has been very much a part of my story and something I'm very open to.
Talk about how the role of the family album has evolved over the 150 years or so since they first came into use.
The family album has evolved alongside the technology of photography. So in the beginning, only very, very wealthy people could get their pictures taken because they were expensive, a daguerreotype. I mean, not so much very wealthy, but poor people couldn't afford to do that. And as you moved into the 1900s, you had the Brownie camera, and that all of a sudden allowed for common people to take their photographs and take lots of lots of photographs. And it was around that time, 1915, 1920, you had a lot more women photographers emerging and taking their images. And in fact, several people brought in the family album of their great-grandmothers and said that their great-grandmothers were the photographers, not of the family, but of this rural community. And so people would come to the great-grandmother and get their pictures taken. You know, it kind of continued to evolve and it became more accessible economically. And then what is so different now relative to then is that with the family album that we inherited from our parents or grandparents, those images were curated to tell a story. You didn't put every single image you took in the album. You put only select images. You might not have printed everything out, but you might have said, okay, this is one image that out of all these images that tells a particular story, you know, because we had this book, and so everything couldn't go in the book. And now I think in some ways lost that sense of curation of the family album, you know, telling the family story. It's a little bit more dispersed. We can tell a lot of it. We have a lot of images, but we don't have like a clear narrative and, you know, going back. And so it's been broken a little bit, that kind of visual storytelling that the family album engendered, you know, over many generations. And so the purpose of the family album has now shifted. And so we're trying to provide another kind of way to understand and another use for the family album with this show, and to make it in some ways more national and to provide, like, you know, a picture of who we are and who we want to be. And so that's what we're trying to do. We have a hashtag, Family Pictures USA. And so all those images that people hashtag on social media show up on our website, which is familypicturesusa.com. And so people can see their images, you know, in relation to other people's images. And some families come together and find one another. We've had at our community photo sharing events, we've had people come and found cousins, you know, found neighbors that they didn't, you know, neighbors of the grandparents, sure. You know. And so it's a coming together of community, which is really beautiful. And, you know, even during times when it might be an accent on our differences now, you know, this is a space where we can come together and share and celebrate one another for our commonalities despite our differences.
Yeah, it's funny. I have a big photo album of my family with prints going back into the 1870s. My mom put one together for each of her children nearly 30 years ago. But I have to admit that apart from when I first got it and occasionally looking for a particular thing in it every few years, I don't think I've ever gone through it all again. And did you find that was common, that people had them tucked away on a shelf gathering dust or stuck away in a drawer and could have had trouble remembering which drawer it was in, that kind of thing? Was it like that, or did they just show up with them?
Yeah, people were excited to have a reason to look through the album, you know, to have a reason to actually look and find something, like you said, you know, that you went to look for a particular thing. This show allows people to go into their album and find stories that they want to share, and allows them to transform this kind of thing, which is, you know, kind of tucked away or lost in the house somewhere, you know, and to bring it forward and to see its value, you know, and to, so we reconnect people with their family albums. And, you know, out of that, some people are starting short films, other people are writing books. You know, for me, I've been living off of my family album for the last 30 years. My grandfather was a photographer, my stepdad was a photographer, and many of the men in my family are photographers. And I've used those family albums to make films. And these films have traveled all over the world, and I've built a career, you know, based on my, you know, my patrimony. You know, these albums that have been handed down. And so the origin of this project actually came about when people were, you know, my audiences would see my work and they'd say, well, can you build some kind of platform for us to do something similar? And so I feel like this is my life's mission to give people a way to use their family albums in new and creative ways.
Yeah, you've kind of got a tiger by the tail now, I think. I assume that the younger people in the family were less aware of their past than the older ones. Did they seem to take to this in a big way? I mean, was it like a big revelation to them compared to their, you know, grandparents who knew the album and had helped put it together and that kind of thing?
Well, that's the amazing thing about it, is that young people, once they have a sense of that this is a possibility, they completely were gung-ho. They would go to their grandparents, the oldest person in their family, their moms. It would be like a family kind of adventure. Okay, I want to find this image. I want to get this story. It would be like a treasure hunt, you know? And then they would come and share what they found. And it provided a kind of an excuse to, like, put down their phones or turn off the TV and just focus on these precious items in their family, you know, in their homes, and unearth those albums and to tell these stories again, but tell them with a kind of a sharper ear, you know, to hear it with a sharper ear for the story and to see the value in it and to dig a little deeper. And so it became this kind of collective family kind of discovery. And they would come in and share those stories. And it was heartwarming because to know that this project is giving people this kind of gift. And people can do this, you know, while the oldest member of the family is still around, or while the house is intact and, you know, and the images haven't gone missing, you know, through a fire or a flood or whatever, you know, or a move. So that has been deeply edifying, you know, speaking with millennials and, you know, young people who are like, you know, gung-ho about this project. And I think it's really going to, you know, inspire them and connect generations. For me, that's something that is really heartwarming.
Well, it's like I said in the beginning, I think that as the sense of roots has gotten thinner and weaker, conversely, the hunger for it has increased, right? So you've provided
Absolutely.
A kind of a connection to maybe jump, skip past the immediate past generation for these younger millennials and so on back to their distant roots. And, you know, part of the curation that you mentioned that people did in putting together these photo albums was that they gave them captions and they said, on the right is so-and-so and, you know, this is a third cousin on the right and this is a family friend and, you know, and mm-hmm. so it's a little story there that they would have no awareness of or any access to otherwise. So, you know, I think that people can draw strength from discovering or even rediscovering what blood and the history it conveys can bring them. I also imagine that greater communication and openness about the taboos of the past, right, including mixed marriage and the children of slave masters that you covered in some of your profiles and illegitimate children and all of that is actually enriching people everywhere and bringing them more in touch with their shared humanity. And I think your project is helping to drive that, and you're kind of finding that as you go around that you're, you know, kind of putting holes in the dam, letting all of that start to come out.
Yeah, I would agree. We're also like seeing a kind of changing South, you know, Oxford, the town that you mentioned has a Jewish mayor, and it's a woman. She's the mayor of Oxford. You know, we worked with her to put together the community photo share there. And so she, you know, kind of handpicked the people that, you know, that she thought could tell different stories of Oxford. And so the young Latina woman that you had mentioned, Teresa May Velasquez, she is the head of the historical museum there. She was born there. Her parents migrated from Mexico. Her grandparents migrated from Mexico. And she grew up there, moved away, and then came back. And is now the director of the local historical museum. So we're seeing, like, you know, these towns all of a sudden kind of have new life. You know, at one point, there were places where young people were fleeing from. And now people are going back and finding, you know, this kind of old town and the old town values, but in a kind of a new kind of way with fresh blood. You know, and so we wanted to kind of capture what we were seeing in those places.
Well, Thomas, this is great, but we're going to have to leave it there. We're out of time. Again, the series is Family Pictures USA, and it premieres Monday, August 12th at 9 p.m. Eastern, and Tuesday the 13th from 8 to 10. It's a two-hour show then on PBS, and will be simultaneously streaming on PBS.org. And when you watch the shows, you'll see the big thing that we can't show on the radio, which is the photos themselves. And they give us a fascinating look into the multicolored patchwork of America. Well, Thomas Allen Harris, thank you so much for being on with us. I appreciate it.
Thank you so much, Court. And I would just tell your listeners that they could follow me on Instagram and also Twitter, Thomas Allen Harris, and also Facebook. We have a Facebook group, Family Pictures USA, so they could follow us there and contribute their stories to the larger story.
Well, it's a social media, and you're covering social media platforms everywhere, so thanks again, and I want to thank all of you for listening. I hope you'll tune in again next week, same time, same place, for more American Variety Radio.